This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A new legislative session is underway, and while many of the bills debated have come up before, their fate may be different this year. That's because, for the first time in more than a decade, New Hampshire Republicans have a trifecta of political power, controlling the state House, Senate, and governor's office. So long-stalled GOP proposals on guns, voting, and unions are far more likely to pass this year. But while those issues often highlight partisan divisions, Republicans and Democrats are hoping to come together on some huge challenges, including the state's opioid addiction crisis and reforming our child protection system. Let's hear from you this hour. What do you want the legislature to do this year? The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have four guests with us in studio. Representative Richard Hinch is here, Republican House Majority Leader from Merrimack in his fifth term. And Representative Hinch, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Well, good morning. Thank you.
Also with us, Senator Chuck Morse, Republican Senate President from Salem in his sixth term. And Senator Morse, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us, Senator Donna Soucie, Democrat from Manchester with three terms in the House and three in the Senate. And Senator Soucie, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
And also with us, Representative Steve Shurtleff, Democratic House Minority Leader from Penacook in his seventh term. And Representative Shurtleff, welcome back. Thanks for being here. Well, I want to turn to all of you on this, but Senator Morse, you first. So here we are in the opening days of a brand new legislature. When you're done with your work in June, Senator Morse, what's going to make you feel like that was a good 6 months? We did a good job.
Well, I always feel like we do a good job because this crew works very hard. But I honestly think we need to drive this economy. And we've said that before when we've been on this show, and we need to continue to do that. So that's what we'll be starting out with. And hopefully we can come back in June and tell you we accomplished that.
When you say drive this economy, in what way, Senator Morse?
Well, I think in order to drive the economy and to get the young people to stay in the state of New Hampshire, we have to grow jobs. I think it's important. I think we're going to talk about doing tax reductions. I think we're going to talk about education quite a bit. That's the governor has said that in his speech when he spoke on Thursday. So I think we'll drive that home.
Well, a little bit later, we should talk more about workforce development, because that's what I'm hearing from economists and business leaders. Right, Senator Morse? We really need to bring in the workers to fulfill some of these jobs.
And I think there's going to be several pieces of legislation that talk about how we're going to do that. And that's what the debates will start this week.
Okay. Well, so turning to you, Representative Hinch, again, House Majority Leader, what's going to make you feel like that it was a good January to June?
Well, certainly if we're able to accomplish good legislation, we have to navigate through a number of bills. It's looking right now as though the House will probably have somewhere around 800 bills that we're going to have to deal with. As Senator Moore said, you know, job one, of course, is going to be to get through the budget process. And that is a process. The governor is going to deliver his budget to us and then we'll start going through it line by line, area by area, and making sure that, it's prudent and balanced. So while the Finance Division is working on it, obviously Ways and Means will be working on the revenue side of it as well.
Well, it's worth noting that this is a budget year. New Hampshire runs on a two-year budget cycle, and
yes,
the governor proposes it sometime in early to mid-February. And then it's a big job for the House. You guys have to go through it, as you said, line by line, and see how you feel about it.
That's right. And it is a very long process. It is not unusual for the members of the Finance Committee to work 5 days a week, 6 days a week during that time period, because we have to get it through the House. Then we have to get it through the Senate, and the Senate starts their process as well.
Well, and I'll turn to the Democrats on our panel. And tougher sledding for you guys this time around with control of nothing at the State House, House, Senate, or governorship. But Senator Soucie, to you first, you know, if you could get one or two priorities that you want, what would those be?
I think the workforce issues are number one. I think continuing to build and expand on the middle class and providing workforce opportunity. I have traditionally and have once again this year sponsored an increase in the minimum wage. I think it's really important that we look at impediments to work and in many cases challenges with getting family leave. Increasingly, people have to take care of not only their children but elderly parents, and recognizing that. Also, more affordable child care. Child care is a problem in this state, and if we are going to attract young people, we need to look at not only creating more jobs but looking at the quality of life issues around those workplaces to ensure that young people want to relocate and also stay in the state of New Hampshire.
So that cluster of issues related to workforce development, child care, housing, family leave, and so forth.
And wages, yes.
How about you, Representative Shurtleff?
Well, I agree with Senator Susie. This past fall, I was in China, and the Chinese, I asked if they had full-time kindergarten, full-day kindergarten. And they said, we have actually 2 years of full-time preschool for our students. And I think New Hampshire in the U.S. also needs to catch up with other countries and provide more educational opportunities. And at the other end of that spectrum is our college students. Half our students are leaving New Hampshire to go out of state to school. We've got to find a way to make it economically viable for them to remain in New Hampshire for post-secondary education.
So how do you go about that?
Well, I think we have to look at UNH and making public education more affordable. We have the highest tuition of any state in our public post-secondary education of any state in the union. I think we got to find a way. We only provide maybe 8% of the university's budget, but I think the university needs to step up. And unfortunately, we see at times they'll do things that will hurt them. This million-dollar scoreboard, it was explained to me by the chancellor that it was actually making money because of ads, but the optics were terrible.
You know, in his inaugural address, Governor Sununu said on this idea of, you know, what we can get done, he said, let's look for the low-hanging fruit where Republicans and Democrats can agree on solutions. He mentioned that he was going to meet with Democrats shortly after his inaugural address. Let's hear a little clip from NH1. This is Governor Sununu talking about that meeting with the other side.
It was a great meeting. I'm just trying to understand what their priorities are, what they want to achieve. Where's that, I call it the low-hanging fruit, which is really the common ground.
What do you think, Senator Morse? What's the low-hanging fruit? And then we'll talk about the higher-hanging fruit in a moment.
Well, I think the Senate has always worked well together, to be honest with you. I think we know we want to drive this economy, and I think we know we have problems with drugs, and those will be the first two things that we attack. And I think there's a lot of common ground there that we can make sure that we create jobs. We all want to make sure that someone that graduates from the university system graduates with as little debt as possible and can get a job here in New Hampshire. I think there's a whole scope of things that's being delivered in legislation. There's 300 bills in the Senate alone that we're going to have to debate and figure out where we can come to a meeting of the minds. It's a high priority for us. But then if you go to the drugs and opioids and I think we've put a lot of money into it in the state of New Hampshire. I think we have to – first of all, 500 deaths are not acceptable to anyone in the State House, Republican or Democrat. And I think we have to go back and look at what we did and what's working and what isn't working. I'm sure everyone at this table wants to stop it, and I think that'll be day one.
Well, let's talk about that then, because that's huge. And you're right. No one thinks that, you know, more than a death a day from an overdose is acceptable. So as lawmakers, as leaders at the State House, you first again, Senator Morse, you know, what's your role to help alleviate this? You're right. You guys did a lot last year, but what more needs to be done?
My role as everyone at the table, I've certainly let the governor know that I think it's something we need to meet on every day. We need to manage our way through it. I think that's extremely important, and that's where I play a big role in this. I think as Senate President, there's 24 senators that want to solve it, and I need to reach out to the governor and make sure that we get this done.
Senator Susie, what do you think?
A couple things. I do think we need to continue to look at the whole the recovery and recuperation process for people that have these addictions. I do think we're still not devoting enough attention and resources to the immediate point of contact, and that being our firefighters and EMTs, those people that literally are holding someone's life in their hands when they revive them following an overdose. So I do think we need to focus more there, and I also think we need to focus more on education. This at more primary grades and lower levels. The more we can educate children, as we know, a lot of times children actually help to educate their parents, and the more we can educate children about how they can help their parents as well will benefit all of us.
Well, it's been said for a long time, Senator Susie, that New Hampshire has one of the lowest percentages of treatment readily available for folks when they're on the edge. You know, they say, okay, I'm ready to try working on that. Is this still the case, given that there has been so much attention and funding in recent years?
I still think we missed the mark to some extent on treatment, but I think we need to look at the whole spectrum of recovery resources that we have in the state. We recently opened a new Hope for New Hampshire Recovery in my Senate district in the old C.A. Hoyt Furniture Building, making sure that we're locating services where people are likely to access them and feel comfortable accessing them is really, really important as well.
Well, it's heartbreaking, Representative Shurtleff, and we've all heard the stories about families and lives cut way too short, yeah, way too young. I mean, again, as a state lawmaker, what more do you want to do this year that you guys didn't do last year? Last year, again, there were, you know, some laws passed around Good Samaritans. There was a lot of funding. I mean, what more do you need to do?
Well, I think it's a three-legged stool approach of this war on drugs. It's enforcement. And by enforcement, I don't mean going after the users, their victims, like going after the suppliers that are coming in from out of state. Secondly is education, doing more in our public schools. And third is treatment. And this past Friday, I was glad to sign on as a co-sponsor to a bill by Senator Bradley to dedicate more troopers to drug interdiction. I think we've got to address those three issues and do more in New Hampshire. And I think this influx of federal money coming in will be a great help.
Well, there is new federal money coming in, announced just at the end of the year. What more do you think could be done, Representative Hinch, whether it's treatment, education, law enforcement? What's your view?
Actually, it's all of the above. I was happy to serve on the opioid task force last year and co-chaired it with Senator Bradley. Representative Shurtleff was a member of it, as was Senator Susie and Senator Morrison. And, you know, I think we have to come to grips with the fact that we have a state of emergency in New Hampshire. We talk about the war on drugs, but it is really a state of emergency. 500 deaths. And as you said, one is too many. So it does start with the early education and making sure that at the earliest possible age that our children are being educated on the effects of drugs it's like the years ago, I remember in the school, we had the program for young children to understand the criminal element and all that, and also making sure that we are opening up more safe stations. The other night, I got a voicemail from a very dear friend of mine who's the deputy chief in the city of Nashua, and he invited me there to meet with him and the chief to see what they've done with the brand new safe station they've opened up. Obviously, Manchester's already been up and running with theirs, and we need to do more of those as well. We need to educate the parents in understanding what are the warning signs that they should be looking for as well, because it does affect every single family in some way.
And sometimes it's the parents who are addicted. That's why DCYF is seeing so many more cases. So.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yep.
Well, and so the question is, and I think I asked this to Senator Susie, but to Representative Hinch, the complaint has long been that New Hampshire doesn't have enough treatment. And we've gotten, again, heartbreaking phone calls from parents who say, my son, my daughter was, you know, they overdosed. He or she was on the edge, ready for treatment, and there was nothing available, or what was available, they couldn't afford it. So I just wonder how you think that the state should address this.
Well, and first of all, you know, that's totally unacceptable. We have to make sure that there are the appropriate facilities to handle this. And I think as it becomes more top of mind awareness and the message is driven home, that it really does affect our neighbors, our families, our coworkers, and things like that. And we have – the rubber has to hit the road.
And the other side of this coin, Senator Morrison, we've heard these calls too when we talk about this issue is sometimes we talk about, you know, the need for treatment and state funding or whatever. And we do hear from people who say, look, you know, nobody made that person stick the needle in their arm. Why should I have to pay for this through my tax dollars? It's not my problem and it's not my fault. I wonder how you feel about that, how you sort of work through that.
Well, I think my first statement was perfectly clear. There's been 500 deaths in New Hampshire. It's unacceptable. The governor has made it perfectly clear that he agrees with everyone at this table. We're going to start early childhood education, and we're going to look at what we've done so far. And I think we need to do that on a daily basis and manage our way through this process. It's extremely important to get going on this and get it done. We can't accept this.
Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, a panel of top lawmakers from the House and Senate is with us talking about their priorities for the brand new legislative year. 1-800-892-6477. What do you want lawmakers to accomplish this year? What are your hopes? Again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. So again, pinging off of the governor's analogy, low-hanging fruit. Representative Shurtleff, what do you think? What's the high-hanging fruit where Republicans and Democrats are going to have a hard time coming together?
I think there's two issues that come to mind. First of all, gun issues. Broadening the gun, what is called constitutional carry. I understand the governor and the Senate and the Speaker of the House have said those are priorities. The other one is right to work legislation. With the gun issue, you know, I'm a hunter. I own guns. I carry guns as a law enforcement officer.
You're former U.S. Marshal,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So I am not anti-gun by any former NRA member, but. I think we've got to be very cautious, and I'd like to see some of the loopholes we currently have, such as the gun show and online loophole, closed. The other issue, of course, is right to work. It's Governor mentioned that in his inaugural address. I think it's up in the – I don't think it's going to pass in the House. I think it's most people don't see that as a major issue in the state. And lastly, voting rights is something we're going to be working on to protect the right to vote. We can't open up to allow more people access to weapons when at the same time denying them the right to vote.
So we're heading into a break, but Representative Hinch, let's talk a little bit more about the constitutional carry. So how would that change the way things are currently run?
Well, with constitutional carry, it means the essence of it really is that you're not going to have a permit to carry a concealed weapon. That's it. It's pretty simple. There has been no evidence that I'm aware of that indicates that states who have constitutional carry have any increase in crime from doing that.
So right now, if I have a license to carry a gun, but I need to get an extra permit from my local police if I want to carry it concealed. That's the difference, right?
Well, we have open carry. So
right.
If you want to carry it concealed, you have to get a permit from your police chief. Yeah.
Do you want to jump in on that?
I just want to follow up. From everything I learned when I chaired the Criminal Justice Committee and past hearings, from what law enforcement tells me, 95% of those that ask for a permit are giving a permit. There are some suffering from dementia or some form of mental health issue that would make them not a candidate to carry a concealed weapon.
All right. I think we need to follow up a little bit on that after a short break. And then a lot more of what you talked about, right to work, voting laws. Lots of listeners want to jump into our conversation as well. So keep it right here. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, top state lawmakers are with us previewing the 2017 legislative session and their goals. The exchange number for you to join us with your goals, your hopes for the new legislative year is 1 892-6477. Send email to exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Our guests are Representative Richard Hinch. He's the Republican House Majority Leader. Senator Chuck Morse, Republican Senate President. Also Representative Steve Shurtleff. He's the Democratic House Minority Leader. And Senator Donna Soucy. She's a Democrat from Manchester with 3 terms in the House and 3 in the Senate. Again, that number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. And just before the break, we were talking about high-hanging fruit. Those issues are going to be a little harder to find agreement on. And Senator Morse, I did want to get your thoughts about what some call constitutional carry, the idea that you need a special permit right now from your local police department if you want to carry your gun concealed. Representative Shurtleff made the point that it gives police chiefs some discretion if they have some concerns about some that they might pose a danger. And I just wonder what you think.
Well, if we were on TV, I mean, we'd show you by putting our hand in our pocket or in our suit coat the difference between concealed carry and what we have today. Talking to my local police chief, you know, giving permits, like the representative said, 95% of the people are getting permits. My local police chief doesn't even have time to do the permits. I think today law enforcement understands that everyone may be carrying a gun. Most people that are causing the problems are those people that are doing it illegally. And I think most people that carry guns in our state are law-abiding citizens.
And this has been a priority, Senator Morse, for a couple of years for Republicans, right? So probably pretty good chance of getting this passed this time around.
Well, it's certainly been a Republican issue, and the governor that went on to Washington hasn't supported it.
So, Susie, and then we'll go to our listeners.
I just think it's disappointing that we're talking about working together and that we each outline priorities and none of us mention concealed carry or right to work, because I don't think those are the priorities that the people of New Hampshire want us to focus on. And as I said, it's just disappointing that we should start out by dealing with those issues right off the bat. I think we should be focusing more on workforce development issues and the opioid crisis. And
let's go to our listeners. And Andrew's joining us from Keene. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Senator Soucy mentioned earlier that one of her priorities is related to the workforce. So I was wondering, what priority would you give to transportation, given that a large portion of this state, in order to get to a job, you can't really get there unless you drive a car?
Andrew, it's a good question. And actually, we've done a lot of talking on this show with demographers and economists. And one of the issues that's emerging, Senator Soucy, I'm sure you're aware, is a lot of economic vibrancy in the cities, in Keene and Nashua and Concord and Portsmouth. And so it makes it harder for folks in those areas where there isn't transportation and the economy isn't as full of jobs. So go ahead. And I'd love to hear from you too, Representative Hinch, but go ahead.
Well, we certainly do have some access to public transportation in the city of Manchester, but the caller is right. Other than by car, in most cases, people are limited. Certainly in the past legislative session, we worked on efforts to try to expand passenger rail. I don't see that happening this time around, which is disappointing. I think there are a lot of businesses, particularly in the southern part of the state, that look at rail as a way to improve transportation in our state. But I do think we can work to improve our infrastructure. We still have a number of red-listed bridges, and we have roads that are in desperate need of repair. And we certainly need to continue the expansion of Interstate 93. And we need to look at new models like ride sharing. I chaired a study committee this past legislative session where we did enact some legislation to have the Department of Safety oversee ride sharing, such as Uber and Lyft and other such methods of transportation that I think folks are starting to gravitate towards.
What do you think, Representative Hinch? Transportation as a workforce development issue? Our caller, Andrew, kind of tying those two issues together.
Sure. First of all, as it deals with the passenger rail, we have looked at this for years and years. And the bottom line through all the study comes out that if it was meaningful or a productive way to go about putting in passenger rail, we would have had independent companies in the private sector that would have come up and done something about it. You know, the last go around, there was conversations about the MBTA joining in a partnership with us. I look at that, and that's kind of scary because I don't think the MBTA is doing a very good job in Massachusetts. I think that there are other more critical issues that we can spend our dollars on at this point than passenger rail.
One more question for you. I'll throw this to you, Senator Morse, on rail. Here's an email from Christopher in Manchester. With the recent big announcement of the major biotech project to be headquartered in the Mill Yard, my hope is that our leaders in Concord would make a serious commitment to bring commuter rail to southern New Hampshire. This would serve as a way to connect to education and research centers in Boston and Cambridge, as well as attract new workers to the Granite State, which would in turn strengthen our economy. So, Senator Morse, there you have Christopher and Andrew, our caller, saying, look, better transportation, especially public transportation, would help solve this demographic problem, this workforce problem that our state has. I wonder what you think.
Well, I think there's a whole host of things that need to be accomplished. I-93, first of all, we haven't permitted the fourth lane and we've built it. So I think we need to get that done. I certainly see opportunities between Salem and Manchester to build a workforce and housing within that workforce. That's what young people want right now. We saw that success story in Portsmouth. We're seeing it in Manchester. We're trying to build that in Salem. I think it's a great opportunity for this state, but we have to look at our zoning laws. That's a local issue, and we need to make sure that we get away from what we traditionally did in this state. I mean, growing up in Salem, we went to two-acre zoning because it's what the people wanted. Today, young people don't want that. They want to live, work, and play in the same area. I think that's what we have to start to do. But along with that, I honestly believe that the permit to put the fourth lane on I-93 will drive businesses to New Hampshire and cause businesses to expand in New Hampshire.
I've heard from people who take that bus down to Boston, you know, the regular commuters, and those buses are full, by the way, if you've ever taken them. They tell me, Senator Morse, that the problem isn't New Hampshire. It's once you get close to Boston, that's where you get stuck. So a wider I-93 doesn't really help with that.
Well, remember, we put that bus route in to go to Boston because we were building the highway and we were trying to find a solution during that time period. I think it's time to reverse that and send that bus right to our airport in Manchester, which hasn't been happening, and to make sure that that bus route is working here in the state of New Hampshire. I think there's a great opportunity there. It's been a success story for years because we wanted it to be. Now let's reverse it.
Well, let's go back to our listeners. Andrew, thank you for that call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Ruth is in Wilton. Hi, Ruth. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Sure. I want to comment, going back to the discussion about the opioid crisis. I know that's been on the back burner for a couple of minutes, but I want to point out that there are, I understand the reason for the opioid crisis. I really do. I'm very sympathetic, and I think it's well deserving of attention. I would also, hello?
Yes, we're still here. We're listening,
okay.
Ruth.
Okay. I also would like to point out, however, that there are hundreds of thousands of people like me who suffer from various kinds of mental illness, and getting care is practically impossible. MCH has closed their facility. CMC is closed. Dartmouth-Hitchcock debacle, last year, drew a great deal of attention to the fact that psychiatrists are almost non-existent in this state, and the quality of the care, and I'm speaking from experience, the quality of the care is just horrible.
Well, Ruth, I'm really sorry to hear about your struggles. And we did do a whole program on this a couple months ago. You know, given all the much deserved attention on the opioid crisis, Representative Shurtleff, some people like Ruth say, you know, our mental health system needs to be rebuilt. There was a whole lawsuit on that. We're still working under the demands of that lawsuit. So I wonder what you think about your job on this as a lawmaker.
Well, first of all, I thank the former Chief Justice John Broderick for leading the charge on this issue. And let me just speak from a personal area. In September, I went back to Vietnam for the first time after 50 years, thinking it'd be very good to see the country as it is now. And that brought back a lot of memories to me. And I probably made a mistake in going there alone. And in hearing more from Justice Broderick, I went and saw a counselor and been diagnosed with PTSD, and now I'm getting treatment for it. So I guess after 50 years, it's not too late. So we've got to do more. And I think Ruth is right. I think my thought is that a lot of these people that are using drugs are doing so to self-medicate.
Yeah, we can't put it in silos, really. It's
no,
all
we really
kind of related.
Can't. But I think there is a nexus between this drug crisis we're having and people in need of treatment that aren't getting it.
So as a lawmaker, again, how do you go about that? I mean, do you say when it comes state budget time, let's give more money to community mental health centers? What do you do?
Well, we have to look at the budget and prioritize what's important. I think any health issue is always a top priority in the state of New Hampshire. And as a kid growing up in Concord, when we had 2,100 people at the New Hampshire Hospital, we closed, we deinstitutionalized them, which was the right thing to do. We provided care for a short while. That funding stopped, and now we have people going to jail that should be in treatment facilities.
Well, thank you for sharing your story, by the way. And Senator Morse, you have often played a big hand in setting the budget. It's a big job that you have. How are you going to weigh all this out? And by the way, I have read that the much vaunted surplus isn't as fat as we thought.
Well, first of all, I think that the budget debate is what we do best in the state of New Hampshire. And, you know, mental illness doesn't, I'm sure it falls in everyone's life at this table and throughout the legislature. My dad was 95% deaf, had mental illness, and I certainly had to deal with that as a young child. Going over the border to Massachusetts to get services, like I hear from many people.
Wow.
But I think one of the problems in New Hampshire is we put money into situations and we don't manage our way through it. I strongly believe that we need to look at all these problems, the drug problem, the mental health problem, and how it works together. You know, when I first started out chasing the 1115 waiver, which we don't need to debate today, but the intent was to help that person getting out of prison to make sure they had a place to go to sign up for health care and to make sure they could get a job and make sure we give them treatment for drugs and alcohol so they didn't go back. And we failed. And I really believe there's a lot of opportunity here in this state. And as we do the budget process, it's not all about money. It's about making sure that we put the management skills to that money. And I think that's what we'll do here this year.
What was the 1115 waiver?
The 1115 waiver was supposed to we put it in place years ago. We started the debate about it to drive down costs in healthcare in New Hampshire, but get some extra help to set up those systems. I specifically wanted to set it up for mental health. I had gone to Speaker SciTech and talked about our correction system, and I said, we have some huge flaws here. People get out and they go back in. And I wanted to solve that problem, and I think we need to concentrate on that. We certainly put a lot of money into mental health that didn't get to people like your caller, and I'm hearing that, and I think it's a problem.
All right. We could probably talk about this for another 20 minutes. A big issue. Ruth, thank you so much for putting it on the table. Let's go next to Chris in Nashua. Hi, Chris. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
In regards to the opioid crisis, I was speaking with an EMT here in Nashua, and he told me that sometimes they're going out to the same address two or three, maybe four times a night. He was quite literal about that. And it makes me think that if this is going to be a war, we really need to kind of clamp down immediately. So that very first time that you get out for an overdose, I don't see why we don't essentially arrest that person and force them into some kind of institutional, detox program. I mean, you know, I'm not talking about like, you know, long-term residential. I'm just saying like, you know, get them cleaned up in a week or something, like to try to interrupt the cycle right when you got them. Because, you know, apparently you can just refuse treatment and these EMTs just keep coming back. And what he also said is, they're giving more and more of the Narcan, you know, because somebody just becomes, I don't know, so doped up on you know, to get a bigger and bigger high.
Chris, thank you so much. And all of you, I have heard stories from law enforcement where they keep rescuing the same person over and over again. I'm glad you called, Chris, because maybe to you first, Representative Hinch, but you too, Senator Susie, we've talked a lot about, you know, money for treatment and care and so forth. But what about the other side of this, sort of the rules and laws as to how we manage this?
Sure. And I think the work that was done by the task force last year laid a foundation for that as well. And I think that there is a multi-pronged approach that needs to be taken. First of all, we have to make sure that the appropriate rules, and I'm not talking about micromanaging, but the appropriate rules are in place for writing out prescriptions, and that, you know, someone who has an issue, that we're not writing out a prescription for them for 90 days when 10 days would take care of, you know.
Yeah,
that.
A lot more oversight of that these days.
A lot more oversight of that. Senator Bradley was really instrumental in making sure that that came to the forefront last year in the task force. Going back to what Senator Moore said, I think that I am really, really encouraged by what I heard from Governor Sununu the other day, not only in his address but also in the subsequent meeting that we had with him in the afternoon of Inauguration Day. He is going to absolutely be a hands-on manager. He understands, being an engineer, how to set priorities and think beyond the box. And he, the excitement and the enthusiasm that he has, I think, is going to set a new tone. And he is going to be just a great manager. And I think that's what we need.
So, Susie, I want to turn to you on this, especially because Manchester has really struggled with this issue, perhaps more than any other community. What do you think about what Chris says? You know, the frustration that you hear from EMTs, first responders, they keep reviving the same people over and over again. Can you, once you revive somebody, say, okay, I'm bringing you in and you've got mandatory treatment for a week? Or
well, it goes back to what I said earlier, and I do think we need to place more emphasis and more focus on people in that critical moment. I've been told when someone is first revived from an overdose, that is the most critical point when they're asking for help, that you need to provide it. So getting more tools and more training for our firefighters and EMTs beyond just the we're going to put you in an ambulance and bring you to the hospital, because it's true, as the caller said, the problem is that the person can refuse treatment at any time. Somebody can say, no, I'm done with this, I'm moving on. So having a better chain and more resources for the EMTs and firefighters to refer that individual, I think, is critical.
But we can't tell people, I'm putting the handcuffs on and you're coming with me to treatment for a week. You can't do that.
Certainly, firefighters and EMTs don't have the power of arrest. Only police do. And in, you know, in these cases, I don't think that's the most humane thing to do either. These are people that are victims of their own behaviors in some cases, and just have, as we said, also underlying mental illnesses and other problems that really don't allow us to force them into those situations. But I do think there's more that we can do at that level. And I also think that we need to, and we haven't brought it up at this point, but we do need to look at continuing Medicaid expansion. More than 50,000 people in this state have access to health care. One of the reasons that people sometimes refuse to go into an ambulance or go into a hospital, because they can't afford to pay. And they are concerned about costs going forward. So to the extent that we're able to give people access to health care, including access to treatment that's covered, it will make a difference.
After a break, we should talk a little bit about Medicaid expansion. What might happen? I know Senator Bradley has talked a lot about the substance abuse coverage that has come under this. Governor Sununu, not quite sure what his approach might be in Medicaid expansion. We'll talk about that. After a break, lots of phone calls, lots of emails, too. Here's one from Jillian, who says, I noticed a bill that has been submitted to repeal the law that bans smoking in restaurants, bars, and grocery stores. She says, I feel like it would be a step back for cancer and lung disease prevention. Jillian, thank you for that email. We'll talk about that, too, in just a moment. This is The Exchange. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a new legislative year begins, and we've got a panel of top House and Senate leaders joining us to talk about their priorities. What would you add to the priority list? What do you hope the legislature does this year? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And all of you, just before the break, Senator Susie raised the issue of Medicaid expansion, including the substance abuse coverage, which Senator Morse, I believe your colleague Senator Bradley, says 5,000 or 6,000 people have gotten substance abuse coverage under Medicaid expansion. What do you think is going to happen to Medicaid expansion this year or next year?
Well, first of all, I worked with Senator Bradley and Senator O'Dell to write the bill that brought this to New Hampshire, and I certainly created a system that I think will work well with the federal government block granting New Hampshire. If I had anything to say to the administration that's coming in Washington, it's let the states solve these problems. And I think New Hampshire would solve the problems. And the way the system's set up, it's set up so that we could go in and we could do things like work requirements and better direct people with the – you know, we have managed care in New Hampshire. I think we need to take a better handle on that as legislators. There's great opportunities here. I think Senator Bradley was hitting on some of the things that we're successful now getting people into treatments. But I also think under those treatments, we need to start to look at what we were talking about in mental health. Is it getting to the people the way we at this table believe it needs to get to the people? And I think the ultimate answer there is going to be no. I honestly believe in hearing from the people that are looking for more money. They're not getting what we appropriated already. So something's wrong. We need to fix that part of it. Working with Washington, I would hope Washington gets out of the way and lets New Hampshire do its thing. You know, I explained to my family how I believe things should work. And reality is, if we want to do childcare for people, let's make sure we get them out there, get a job, and give them a credit so that they basically can pay for that child care. Let's not create the credit first and they don't know system to make sure they get a job. We need these people in the workforce in New Hampshire right now. We're hearing that from all the businesses. I think there's important things that we could drive in this economy that we could be a huge success story in the Northeast right now.
If the Trump administration and Republicans in Congress repeal Obamacare as they say they want to, what would that mean for Medicaid expansion, which is funded still largely by the federal government?
Well, look, there's certain things that really make sense. Keeping a young person on their family's health care until they're 26, that's worked, and we've certainly heard that from the people. You know, making sure that on coverage that we have some system in the background for people that, you know, can't get qualified for insurance policies. We talked about that when I was in the House. So that was back in the late 90s. I mean, we certainly believed you needed to create a backstop here in New Hampshire for insurance companies on that. Those are things we can talk about as a state. And I honestly believe if they let us talk about them as a state, we'd be very successful here in New Hampshire because, like the people at this table, we want to solve problems.
You and Senator Bradley really did put yourselves forward. You worked really hard on this Medicaid expansion. You found that so-called New Hampshire way that everybody could agree on. Still, Medicaid expansion is, well, the funding is going to go down to 90% federal, which is still a huge chunk of change. If Obamacare is repealed, are you concerned that that big pot of money will go away?
Well, I think that debate was what I was concerned about when we built the legislation. But, you know, 90% of $500 million is a huge amount of money coming into the state of New Hampshire. And then if you go back to the 1115 waiver that I was talking about, that's another $30 million that's coming into New Hampshire. Assuming the federal government's going to cut back on some portion of that, I think there's a common sense thing here that it won't be 100%. And I think we in New Hampshire can take the percentage they give us and make our system better.
All right. That is another topic for another day, but it's a big one. And there's so much that we've talked about today that we will follow up on in later programs. Let's go back to our listeners now. And Trixie's in Londonderry. Hi, Trixie. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, Trixie.
Well, when the program started, there was a mention of 800 new pieces of legislation brought before the state and the House for this session. My first observation is that appears to be over-regulating, but how many of these bills are actually killed before they even make it to the Senate or the House floor?
Oh, Representative Hinch, that's for you, and it's a great question, Trixie. And after I have to tell you, Trixie, when he said 800, I thought, wow, is that it? Because sometimes in years past, it's up to 1,000 or more. So can you talk about just how you guys, especially in the House, you have to wade through all these bills. And unlike Congress, every single bill gets a vote, no matter what.
That's correct. And
that's a lot of time.
And that's a lot of time. And that's important to note. Any bill that is brought forward by a legislator does go through a public hearing process with the policy committee, and every bill has to come to the I'll stay with the House has to come to the House floor to be acted upon. And it's possible that a policy committee votes a bill down and the House could overturn it.
I've seen it happen before. Yeah,
that's right. And thankfully, it doesn't happen that often because the policy committee are the group of legislative experts in that specific area.
Speaker Jasper, a while back, said he wanted to try and get a handle on this, you know, fewer bills. It was getting out of control. Mm-hmm. Some of the bills were kind of frivolous, and then it made the legislature look bad. And so I just wonder if that's a goal this time around or just forget it. We're sticking with the current system.
Well, it's always a goal to try to reduce the amount of bills because I agree with the caller that it seems like it's overregulation. But if a bill comes forward from a legislator, it was important to somebody. It could have been you as one of my constituents that called me on the phone and said, hey, Dick, you know, can you put this bill forward, et cetera, et cetera. Your original question was, is 1,000 bills normal? And in a budget year, we hope that they would be more manageable and there would be less bills. Second year, it's not impossible for it to be a lot more. I would say on average, if we have 800 bills, most likely we're probably going to see about 200 or so that might be signed into law, and the other ones, aren't going to move forward.
Well, Trixie, it's a great question. Representative Shurtleff, did you want to jump in too? You've been in the House for a long time.
Yeah. One of the things we did last session is we went into coming into the new session. Speaker Jasper proposed and the House agreed in a bipartisan manner to eliminate duplicative bills. And it gave one more step in the process. When bill goes to Office of Legislative Services, if that office feels it's similar to another bill we already have, it can go to the Speaker to make the final determination. And in years past, we've seen 1,200 bills come in a session. So to get it down to 800, I think it was part of the Speaker's initiative.
Well, Trixie, thank you so much for the question. By the way, before the break, I read a short email from Jillian who said she heard that there was a bill to repeal the law that bans smoking in restaurants, bars, and grocery stores. Any of you heard about this? Again, it's early in the process. So, okay, Jillian, thank you for the email. Here's another one from Sandy who says, back in the 80s, there was a no smoking curriculum designed for school kids so that by graduating, kids would not be smokers. Sandy says, do we have any data on how that program worked, how it was presented, the success rate? She says, my experience is kids learn by examples, not lectures. As we know, she says, the original DARE program was a disaster. You know, without addressing the specifics of her question, Senator Susie, you know, there is this question about education. And all of you talked about the importance of education for kids. But do we really know what works and what doesn't? I've got two teenagers. And let me tell you, like, don't do it. Obviously, I say that, but I'm always wondering, is that really the way to go about it? Every kid is different.
Every kid is different. Every school district is a little different at how they develop curriculum around some of these issues. But I do think learning good habits and, as the caller said, by example is really, really critical. We have developed a number of requirements over the years that local districts at least touch on certain subject matter with kids, recognizing that the local school districts are better equipped to determine what the best method is to learn certain information. But certainly learning healthy habits, not smoking, refraining from smoking is very important.
Well, thank you for the email, Sandy, also Jillian. Here's another one from Nancy who says, it seems time for the state to pay more attention to education funding. Payments seem to be declining over the years. Smaller school districts are struggling and need state aid. Frankly, she says, one of the best ways to curb opioid problems is through proper education of our young people. When you're in the rural areas, there's not much choice available. I think she's talking about, making the right choices. Education funding, it hasn't even come up. We haven't even talked about it yet, and we have 5 minutes left. Senator Morse, is there any chance that the formula is going to be tinkered with this year?
Well, I think there's a lot of chance that education will be looked at in many different ways. But, I mean, remember, education funding is going down. I mean, I look at my community of Salem because the amount of students has dropped. I mean, since 2008, I think they've dropped by about 1,000 in Salem, and that's not including Windham moving on to their own high school. So I think the opportunity is there to take the dollars that we are losing because we have less students and to put it into other areas. And I certainly believe that educating young people on drugs and cigarettes and hopefully marijuana, because I think the state's headed in the wrong direction there, are important issues that we need to bring into the school system with the help of Concord. I certainly believe they're trying to make that effort locally.
So since you raised it, let's talk about marijuana policy. There are bills already for decriminalization. And other bills. Obviously, I haven't looked at all 800, but probably other bills for legalization, given that our two neighboring states have done it, Maine and Massachusetts. What about decriminalization, Representative Shurtleff? Is that something that you would support?
That's something I've always supported in the House. I don't want to see a young person with one or two joints have a criminal record because of that and possibly mar their life forever. I'm not an opponent of legalization, at least not at this time. I'd rather see us walk before we run.
Yeah.
So I support decriminalization.
What do you think, Representative Hinch? Decriminalization, legalization, how do you feel?
I'm not a supporter of legalization. I think it flies in the face of you know, we've been talking about the opioid crisis. I see it as a gateway drug, and at this time, unless I see compelling evidence to the contrary, I would not support legalizing marijuana.
Sen. Susie?
I believe this session we will pass decriminalization in some form, and I'm open to that. Legalization, I think, is a long ways off. I think other states that have enacted it, even Colorado, the first state, still to this day have problems with the issue. And since many of the callers raised issues about children and access to drugs and smoking and those concerns, I think we would need to flesh out a lot more concerns of the impact on young people smoking marijuana before we would take any step in that direction.
And Senator Morse, you already said you oppose legalization. What about decriminalization?
Well, I've made it very clear in the Senate that on decrim, I don't support it. And for those that do, I think they better be very strict about this. You know, we're talking about people that we want to protect that are under 21 years old. So I think that's important. To make sure that we understand what we're doing here in Concord. Weakening the laws on those people, I think, are wrong. And I believe the system is there to take care of them now. And I certainly think that we better be very careful when we develop legislation.
So lots of people listening here in New Hampshire, especially in the House, Representative Hinch, strongly favor looser marijuana laws, including legalization. Polls show, you know, here in New Hampshire, people have a more open attitude toward marijuana use than a lot of the lawmakers. I wonder, Representative Hinch, are you out of step with the prevailing political feelings here in New Hampshire?
Sounds like I am. I haven't come to the point where I could embrace legalizing it. Again, I say it flies in the face of us wanting to get a handle on our opioid crisis, and I see it as a gateway drug. And so someone has to prove me wrong.
Again, another topic for another show as the year rolls on. But go ahead, Senator Morse, did you want to jump in super quick there?
Well, super quick. I mean, I supported gaming. 70% of the people in New Hampshire supported it, and the legislature was wiser than I was. So I certainly believe there's an opportunity for debate.
Well, it's interesting, and I was looking back at, you know, we do this show every year at the beginning of the year, and so I looked back at the last couple of years, and I thought, okay, we're not talking about casino gambling this year. So that's different. Here's an email from Gary who says, please have your guests explain how the opioid epidemic came to be. I have heard the pharmaceutical industry was the initiator of this crisis by pushing doctors to prescribe these medicines and denying they would be addicting. Also, when they did this, they encouraged the medical community to add pain as another vital sign to be assessed. Shouldn't we be going after this industry to help pay for some of these costs? Now, I'm not sure who to ask on this, but I believe Attorney General Joe Foster was getting involved in a national effort, right, to get the pharmaceutical companies to pay on this. Senator Susie, you're nodding? Yeah?
Yes, I believe that is the case. And I do think that we have looked at, and we certainly looked at on the task force, issues within the medical profession around prescribing and trying to curtail some of those practices, or at least make sure that doctors and patients make more informed decisions about the types and the amounts of prescription medications that get out to people.
Well, and Gary, I apologize. He has a second question that's very good, also talking about energy efficiency, energy costs, boosting alternative energy. And we'll have to set it aside just in the interest of time. It is a great topic and one that the governor also addressed in his inaugural speech. So last question for all of you. And to first, I think, Representative Hinch. So here's the week, first full week of the legislature. What's at the top of your agenda this week?
Well, certainly at the top of my agenda as majority leader is I have to get a handle on all of the legislation that has been filed.
Those 800 bills
those 800
that you told
bills,
Trixie about, right?
That's right. Because, you know, if we go back a month or so ago, we really had it by title only. It was a legislative request. Now they have been brought to a bill and introduced, and so now I get a handle on all that.
Lots of reading. Get your reading glasses out.
Yes.
How about you, Representative Shurtleff? Top priority this week.
We're having a caucus coming up in 2 weeks of the House Democrats looking at priorities for our caucus, so working on that.
Okay. How about you, Senator Susi?
The first hearing of the Commerce Committee will be on right-to-work legislation. So.
And that's this week in
that's
the State
this
Senate?
This week, yes.
Okay. Senator Morris, first priority.
We start this morning with joint meetings between the House and the Senate on seeing where the state of New Hampshire is headed with revenues, and I think that's an important piece to where we're going this year.
Yeah, that's the budget process. Kicks off with the governor next month, and then you guys take it from there. All of you, I know you're busy. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.